Good.
All right.
He's go ahead.
Okay. 3-5-4-3. It's the conference championship edition of the Orson Round podcast, of course. No Broncos to talk about on conference championship weekend, at least on the field. Plenty going on off the field, of course. I'm Andrew Mason, joined as always by the esteemed Andy Lindahl from Denver Sports 760, KOA 850, 94.1, and of course the Broncos Radio Network. Andy, good day to you.
Thank you. How are you? Every time you use esteemed, I think you hurt your credibility a little bit. Just know that. Hey, real quick, before we get going, she's now a former Bronco cheerleader, but our friend, your friend and mine, mm-hmm. Romy Bean, happy birthday today. We're getting this recorded on the 20th. It is her birthday. She's let everybody know she's turned 30. She loves her birthday. Happy birthday, Romy.
30 is the new 20, Romy. Happy birthday to you.
You know what's so funny? Now, I will give her credit because she's not melting down. I've got a lot of female friends that there's something about the 30 that really freaks them out. And I'm like, wow, really? I think we all feel a little, you feel like you've lost a little youth when the 3 jumps in front of your age. But I told her, I said, frankly, 30s are better. And I don't know how you feel about it. You're not so worried about hanging out at that stupid club that you didn't really want to be at anymore anyway. You're not so worried about the group of people you're hanging out with and looking cool, so you're free to go home. Frankly, I think it's a lot better. You're making a little bit more money. Don't freak out about your 30s, people. It's still prime time.
I thought my 30s were better than my 20s. I will agree with you completely. I think when I turned 30, I was a little freaked out, but that's because I saw Logan's Run when I was a kid when everyone got killed when they were 30.
So, well, you survived that. Yeah. So.
Yeah, they had no little crystals in my hand telling me it was last day in this life. No, I'm good. And the thing is, I didn't really, like, even in the 30s, I felt like I could still do when I wanted to act like I was in my 20s, I could in my 30s until about 38 or 39. And then you get to 40 and it's like, now I'm getting old.
Yeah, I do feel, you know what throws me off? Because I'm in my early 40s, but my 40s nonetheless. And when you start seeing the kids, the guys you watched, or, you know, not to bring a solemn note to this conversation, but guys that you watched as kids are starting to pass away or mm-hmm. pass on, that's when you start to realize, man, you're a little farther down the road than I think mentally you've grasped when things like that happen. But like, for example, I'll give you an example. You and I both know very well the guy I do a radio show with, Ed McCaffrey. Here I have spent the last week kind of banging the table, hoping that this team will draft his son, and not even his oldest son, his second oldest son. So it's all a little bit weird.
Yeah. Some friends of mine who work for the Carolina Panthers, when they were in town for week one, went out for dinner the night before the game, and one of them has been literally covering the team since its early days. I think the first year he was on their beat was 1996, their second season of existence. And he told me, well, if I ever get to where I'm covering the son of a player that I covered back in the 90s, it'll be time for me to retire. And I turned to him, I said, well, you were around for Greg Cragen, right? And he said, yeah, because, of course, Cragen went to Carolina after he was in Denver. I said, well, his son's on the Broncos practice squad right now. And he's like, well, if he comes to our team, that's it. I'm done.
Luckily, he still has a job, right? Not retired yet?
Not retired yet. So, and, I mean, hey, he's in his early 50s. I think he's too young to retire at this point. So, we'll see. But to the Broncos this week, some more staff hirings. Obviously, Mike McCoy was the big one from last week, but Joe Woods officially promoted to defensive coordinator. Jeff Davidson, offensive line coach. Marcus Robertson, defensive backs coach. A couple of them are other moves not yet official, but coming in. But Vance Joseph's staff is falling into place, and I wanted to get your thoughts, Andy, on how this staff is looking and whether it can generate the kind of improvement, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that the Broncos need for any kind of success in 2017.
Yeah, look, I will tell you this, Andrew. When we were, I guess I'll preface this by saying nobody knows. We all realize that. But when you get both Mike McCoy and Bill Musgrave, I had said on the air, hey, if you get them both, that would be great. And I said it tongue in cheek. I did not think, I thought both would fill offensive coordinator positions. I thought you got either or, not them together. Mm-hmm. Now, for Musgrave, it makes total sense for me. Musgrave is a guy that I think, I hope I'm not mislabeling him, but to me, he seems, from the outside, a guy whose career obviously I've followed with his local ties and a stint with the Broncos and on and on and on. He seems to me like a guy that falls into the Wade Phillips mode a little bit, knowing that he's a good coordinator, a good assistant coach, or whatever it is. I guess just watching his career progression, I don't get the impression, again, from the outside, that this is a guy that's really dying to get on that head coaching track, seems to be happy with the role he fills in the NFL, and by a lot of counts, a very good offensive coordinator. Doesn't need to be a quarterback's coach, but let's be honest about it. You and I both know, when it comes to assistant coaches, that, look, I'm sure he's happy here. He probably feels like, I'm not going to have to move again. Assistants are constantly moving, because even when head guys keep their jobs, a lot of times, if a team is down, if they don't fire the head guy, look, this is what was going to go down, period. We know that. The assistants were going to get changed here in town, even if Gary Kubiak chose not to leave, chose not to retire. So assistants live a very nomadic life. And for Bill Musgrave, I'm just assuming he's probably saying, you know what, I can go back home. And let's be honest about it. With as highly as he is thought of here, he can be on this staff for a very long time and may eventually succeed Mike McCoy as the offensive coordinator, because that's a guy that I think, whether it's next year, probably 2 years, whatever, he will be a head coach again. That would be my guess, because that's the kind of success I do expect out of this offense here. So I really like what's coming together on the offensive side of the ball. I like the offensive. I like that they've got now two offensive line coaches coming in. I think that's going to be good. I'm glad Tyke Tolbert stayed. I think all of us that had the pleasure of covering Eric Studisville and the graceful way he handled the transition from Josh McDaniels to John Fox are very happy to see him stay on the staff. There's a guy full of class that I think gets a lot out of his running backs, so I think it's positive that he stayed. And frankly, for me right now, Andrew, I don't know much about the new special teams guy, Brock Olivo. I can even remember that name easy because of Brock.
Tell you a lot about Brock Olivo.
Well, tell me about Brock Olivo. I will just wrap it up with this. The defensive side of the ball, happy for Joe Woods. Congrats to him. I know they got the Raiders defensive back coach in here now, or to be one of the assistants from the Raiders to be the defensive back coach.
It's Marcus Robertson, yeah.
I want to see Kolar stay. I really hope that we see Herring stay. We just have to kind of, I think we still need to see how the dominoes fall on the defensive side. But I think all in all, looks like a great staff Vance Joseph's put around him. Well, rookie staff for sure.
He's indicated that the rest are going to stay. So Reggie Herring's coming back. Fred Pagich is coming back. Bill Kolar's coming back. He said that in an interview earlier this week. So
on Broncos.com right here, right?
It was actually, I think, Pro Football Talk.
Okay.
Yeah, he was on a few days ago. That is a huge coup, because you're looking at a first-time head coach, Joe Woods. Now, he's held in high esteem. There's a reason why the Broncos, wanted him to step up to the defensive coordinator role. There's a lot of people in football that think he's a coordinator, maybe even a head coach in the making, that he has the qualities that you're looking for. But I think the defense is going to be in very good hands with Joe Woods helming it. But having those experienced position coaches, Pagich, Herring, Kolar, that means you don't really have to worry about those positions. You know you're going to get the best out of what you have. Now, I think Kolar is going to have a very fascinating job this year, because I don't think the Broncos are going to stand pat on what they have at defensive line. I think that's going to be an area where some moves are made in free agency, and they're going to obviously hope for more from Adam Gotsis now that he's another year removed from the torn ACL. I think those two things will define what happens up front. But in general, good defensive staff. And then to go back to Brock Olivo, since you mentioned him.
Tell me about him, Andrew. I know he's an assistant to Bill Tobe, who was in the head coach conversation here.
Right. And in getting Olivo, you're trying to tap into what made Kansas City special teams among the best in the league the last few years. Now, with Olivo, he's been a special teams guy for decades. Actually, trivia for you. You know the Mosey Tutupu Award, best special teams player in college football.
Really? I didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah.
I remember him playing with the Patriots. That's why I started laughing. I liked the old Patriots of the right before the Broncos. What was that? The early mid-80s run with Andre Tippett and Tutupu and Eason.
They went to a Super Bowl. Tutupu's dark haired locks where they were flowing out the back of that white helmet with that beautiful Pat Patriot old school logo on it.
One of the best, yes. Although I hate the Patriots. Sorry, he had the cool face mask too that had, it was the mm-hmm. first one that had the three bars in the
yes,
middle.
Yes.
And
that's
I always
right.
loved it. I always loved his face mask. Was, see what happens? You went. I gave you a squirrel moment there.
Yeah,
sorry,
it,
Andrew.
It's okay. It's 10 or 20. He was 10 or 20 years ahead of his time in a lot of ways. So, the first Mosey Super Award in college football was given out in 1997. Brock Olivo was the winner. Now, that says a lot for what he was as a special teams player, and he went on to be a good special teamer for the Lions for four seasons. But in addition to playing special teams, he was also Mizzou's all-time leading rusher. The time he was done with his career there, all-time leader in rushing touchdowns. They actually retired his jersey at Mizzou, number 27, which is very, very interesting. It tells you what they think of him there. But, you know, he was a guy that was, even when he was playing almost every down on offense, he gravitated towards special teams. So he's always had that mindset. He even, you know, he's been a head coach before.
Really? Where?
Italy.
Wait, they have football in Italy?
There is an
American football in Italy?
Yes. And he was a head coach of a team there, and then he was also the head coach of the Italy national team for American football.
I did not even know there was a nat. Look, the jokes are just coming fast and furious, but that'll screw up our podcast.
It's
time.
It's an interesting resume.
It's an extremely interesting resume and fact.
Yeah.
He's a Bill Bates before Bill, well, after Bill Bates, I guess,
right.
But still, he's in the Bill Bates mode, is what you're telling
yes,
me.
Yes, he is.
Remember Billy Bates?
Oh, absolutely.
Running into referees, knocking their hats off. Remember that famous footage?
Yeah, it wasn't the referee, it was one of the chain guys.
Yeah, and he, oh, that's
and
right.
The poor
he
guy, his,
he put his hat back on him all disheveled.
Yeah, the chain guy's like 65, 66 yeah. years old, and he runs into him, and the poor guy doesn't know what hit him.
He didn't know where he was to begin with. Now he really doesn't know.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, here's your hat.
You're right
you okay?
there, fella.
You okay?
Then he pats him on the head like he's wearing a helmet. I'm thinking, look, that guy, I don't know what happened to that. We need to do a where are they now on that poor chain guy. How long did he live after that?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you go by actuarial tables, he's probably no longer with us because that clip, I believe, was in 1989.
I believe the head pat alone took 5 to 10 years off the life. Again, he's smacking his head like the guy was wearing a bill. He doesn't have a helmet on. Calm down with that.
Golly, yes. This took an interesting turn, didn't it?
Well, you had to go Mosey Tatupu on you, and that, you know, then we headed
that
down the path.
That sends us in all sorts of
doors. Do you remember Toontz's? I was telling my buddy Mark Schlereth, we were talking about a conversation. We were talking in conversation about something else earlier in the week, and he used the term piss shiver about something. I was like, wait, what? And I said, had you said that on the air and we were doing a show, it would have been, remember Toontz's from Saturday Night Live? The show would have been driving along fine like Toontz's did, and
yeah.
So was this conversation with you. It's driving along fine. Then you bring up Mosey Tatupu, and the eyes get big, and off the cliff we go with the car on fire. That's what just happened there.
There, you know, there was a Simpsons reference to Mosey Tatupu.
You're kidding me.
No. There was a a Halloween episode. They do like a King Kong parody, and they end up at the island where they find King Kong, and the islanders, in their language, it's, you know, they have it translated at the bottom, but the words that come out of the chief's mouth are, Mosey Tatupu. Mosey Tatupu. When I was 15 years old and I saw that, I thought that was the funniest thing in the world.
I don't know that you get too many better football names than Mosey Tatupu.
Yes.
Do you want to put the car back on the road, Andrew? I won't stand in your way.
I'm going to try to. I'll say this, and there's a reason why you want to, as I said earlier, you want to tap into it. For some reason, I'm thinking about Spinal Tap on their tour, Tap Into America. Tap into Kansas City special teams. The last 3 years, just the years that Olivo was there, no kickoff or punt return touchdowns allowed. Obviously, best in the league. 5 kickoff and punt return touchdowns, third most in the league. So that's what you're looking for, that explosive capability that the Chiefs have on special teams, that the Bears had when Dave Tobe was there before he went to Kansas City. You want some of that knowledge to have rubbed off on Olivo, and you want the Broncos to be the beneficiaries of that. I mean, he's an up-and-coming coach. He's never been a coordinator before. He's been a special teams assistant, so you're asking him to step up. But I think it's an interesting hire that may well pay some dividends for the Broncos.
Well, for whatever it's worth, and I'm sure it was not by design, but look, both these teams were successful. You stole, well, actually, you took a coach from each team in your division, if you think about it. You got your special teams from KC. You got the defensive backs coach from the Raiders. And now you took, of course, the offensive coordinator from San Diego.
And also, Jeff Davison was their line coach.
Oh, okay.
Last year.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Look, the best thing about this is what I'm most impressed with, because, again, you can never predict how a coaching staff and team are going to come together. Honestly, it's proven by Kubiak's first year. We could not predict that coaching staff and new team, new to each other anyway, would come together and function so well together the way that they did. Could not have predicted that. That's the good end. Josh McDaniels, unfortunately, was the bad end, just to pull two examples from Broncos history.
He had a real good staff,
but he was ignorant in his ways. I don't know what else to say. It was all about him. We've already seen, I think, especially by divorcing himself from defensive play calling, that Vance Joseph is not going to come in here and think he's got everything figured out. It doesn't seem to me that he doesn't appear to be a guy right now that's going to come in here with the typical young coach insecurities and try to prove that I am the genius that my reputation prior to my arrival said I was. And I think that bodes very well for the Broncos. Because I can't help but go back, and I keep bringing up Josh McDaniels so everybody knows, because that is the most egregious, that is the best example that I personally witnessed with my own eyes of something going about as far south as it could have compared to what you expected when he arrived. Josh showed up and wanted to show everybody he was the smartest guy in the room. I can tell you from day one of interviews with Vance Joseph, he's not giving that off right now.
He knows what he doesn't know.
And that's important for young guys.
Yes, it is.
And you cannot be afraid to say, yeah, I got some veteran guys on here that are going to help me elevate this thing. Because at the end of the day, all of us get the one loss record.
Yeah, and I think he's not going to be afraid to say, Mike, as in Mike McCoy, you know, what do you think of this? I mean, it's in much this, even though it was interesting that Adam Gase talked about how he bounced stuff off Vance Joseph, and Joseph didn't have any head coaching experience, but I think Vance Joseph is going to be wise enough to look at his assistants and say, okay, you know, what do you think? You have Mike McCoy has been a head coach for 4 years. Eric Studisville has been an interim head coach and has been around the block in this league. And, you know, it's interesting with Studisville. Now he's been around for McDaniels, Fox, Kubiak, Vance Joseph. Some teams have one of those coaches that just kind of survive and they bridge the eras, and Studisville's becoming that kind of coach for the Broncos. It's very interesting. Part of it is running backs coach, what you do there is fairly scheme independent, so it can adapt, but it also tells you in what esteem Eric Studisville is held league-wide, that all these coaches want to keep him on their staff.
Well, for whatever it's worth, and obviously our personal feelings don't affect fans one way or another, but I've always had a great admiration for Eric Studisville. Again, not only just watching him coach on the field, I've heard from the guys that I trust that know football, Jeff Legwald among them, they've told me, hey, look, this guy's one of the best in the business, so that carries a lot of weight with me, especially when you get Leggy's vote of approval. But just watching the man go about his business, watching how all the players seem to appreciate him, and I'm not afraid to say, again, when fans would never know this, but what I always appreciated from Eric at the end of a very tough 2010 year, when Josh McDaniels was let go, Eric assumed the helm of the ship for the last, two, three games of the year there. And when it was over, he wrote us all in the media a nice little email just saying, hey, thank you. It was a pleasure to try to get a chance to do the job with you. And I appreciate how professional you were. Guys don't ever have to do that.
No.
And it just shows you the kind of person that he is. That, again, it's like you could see the Gary Kubiak. That's why we all enjoyed dealing with Gary Kubiak. You know, he doesn't love talking to us all the time, but he's just very professional about it, right?
He knows it's part of the job.
And look, I'll give you examples from this week. What I think stinks is the more we go along here, the more you hear about the other side of Bill Belichick that we don't get to see. And I think it's a real shame he decides to hide that from everybody. You know, Bill, we get that you don't enjoy the media. That's fine, but you don't have to put us through these. It's a waste of everyone's time to have to watch these video clips that we get put up every week because he decides he's not in the mood.
I'll tell you a Belichick story that'll probably surprise a lot of people. My first job out of school, I was working as a producer and editor on NFL.com, and sometimes I'd cover games, but sometimes I'd do stuff from the desk. And back then, we would do a chat. Remember the old online chat sessions with a different coach every week? And one week it was Belichick. And after he answers the fan questions, somehow we just start talking about like Christmas and like Christmas decorations and how tough it is to like make time for the holidays when you're coaching football. And the Patriots, I think they had like a December bye that year, so it was unusual. So he was talking about how he had a chance to enjoy the holidays, put up the tree, all that stuff. And we end up having this meandering 30-35 minute conversation. Just, it's not on the record, just talking about Christmas and life and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, first of all, he's an intelligent guy. He's a fascinating guy, but in situations away from that podium, just sitting down talking to him, he's a very nice man, a very warm man and a very engaging man. So to this day, I find it hard to square that person with the one who's up at the podium. It's different people. And I feel like saying, and it's one thing that always pulls me back. Like, I mean, I may object to some of the things the Patriots do, doing anything to win, you know, pushing the limits of the rules and going beyond at times, as we've seen, et cetera. But when people say like that Belichick is, you know, Darth Vader, the Emperor, whatever, with my experience with him, I can't buy into that. Well, I've seen behind the curtain with him.
I will back up your story. And again, one of the guys you and I knew, and I think both enjoyed his company here, he was a good guy to have in town, was Dave Galen, one of the old PR members mm-hmm. of the Broncos staff. And he told me one time, because he did an internship in New England, internship. I that's important. I think people know this. He said one, again, on the Christmas theme for you, he said one year, Bill Belichick called him into his office, and he's sweating bullets. He doesn't know if he's in trouble. He said Bill calls him in, shuts the door, hands him a note with a very, very nice Christmas gift inside, told him thank you. He pointed out three or four things he remembered from him throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your efforts. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate you being a part of the organization and a good worker. I hope you feel like part of the family. And again, and Dave was like, look, I'm an intern. There's no reason for you to remember me or recognize anything that I've done. But, you know, see, these are the things when we talk about good leadership, that's what you, when everybody says, because I had a lot of people kind of give me flack, and I get it. It sort of became our hot catchphrase all throughout the coaching process, a leader of men. But that right there is the Belichick part of the leader of men that people don't get. We see this crap basically on the TV. Mm-hmm. But what Belichick does, the reason he's been so successful, is that he has that sort of level of conversation that he had with Dave Galen with his players all the time.
Yep.
You screwed up. Here's why. Here's what I need to see, and we'll be all good.
And he doesn't play the game in the media.
Yeah.
He's very much in the realm of, I'm going to correct in private, but I'm going to back you up in public. Players do appreciate that.
Everybody said he was honest. And that's what, you know what, we had TJ Ward on right after we had the press conference. And TJ let it be known to us. I think we mentioned this last week. I can't remember. They're all running together. But TJ, bottom line, said the way Coop's dealt with everybody is what he's going to miss and why he was nervous about a change. Now, I feel like Vance Joseph will quickly calm TJ and everybody else's fears that may have the same.
I think Vance Joseph's learned a lot from guys like Gary Kubiak that he's been around, honestly.
Well, and again, they were all great to work with. I guess here's the bottom line. I like the start that they have right now. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of exciting things are in place, but I think we all know now that the coaching staff's together, now we have to kind of sit, you and I'll do a few more podcasts, but now we've got to kind of bide our time till the next real, you know, factor part of the offseason, and that's player acquisition. Because there are some players that need to be acquired to fill this thing out and really make this thing look different.
And I'm sure when we visit next week, we're going to talk about just that. Well, when we record this next week, I'll be over the phone from Mobile, Alabama. We'll be talking about players now at the Senior Bowl. You know, the Broncos personnel staff's going to be down there. Certainly some potential help it lurks in that game. I can think of one guy in particular. We're going to surely talk about him, and that's a tight end from Alabama, O.J. Howard. He's going to be down there, one of the spotlight guys at a position where the Broncos may be looking to upgrade. But between the draft and the free agency, the draft, they're looking at, if compensatory picks go their way, five of the first 100 selections. They're up to, now that they've had the cap carryover from last year, they're sitting at officially sitting at over $38 million of cap room. Could be more based on some other moves. It's going to be a very important 3 months here, and the Broncos do need to find some immediate help, not only from free agency, but also the draft.
I can't wait. You want to give, before we go, you want to give predictions? Who you got in the Super Bowl? Who's your Super Bowl?
My Super Bowl is Green Bay and New England.
Really?
And the thing is, a part of me wants to pick Pittsburgh, and the Patriots have lost some games at home over the years, but I just don't. Pittsburgh, we see what their attack is. I'm not sure that Pittsburgh's defense will be, especially on the back end, will be quite enough. We know they can generate pressure. We know what James Harrison is doing off the edge. Somehow he's found the fountain of youth this year. But I just don't think Pittsburgh is going to have quite enough. And with Green Bay and Atlanta, as great a season as Matt Ryan has and as bounced as that offense has been, I don't think that Atlanta can do to Green Bay's offense what it did to Seattle's offense. I don't think it can neutralize what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now. And Rodgers is just, at this point, brilliant. It's interesting how he had about a 16-game stretch where people asked, is it getting close to the end from him? I mean, people would say the Broncos broke him. I think even I said that, because he did have about a full-year stretch late 2015 to midseason of 2016 where his numbers were down. Well, he may have been broken. He's fixed now.
I'll make mine quick. I'm going to go with Steelers-Packers, and frankly, I'm more nervous about my Packer pick than I am the Steelers pick, so there you go.
Well, if Atlanta does go, it'll be their second Super Bowl appearance. One sad thing about all this, no matter who wins in the Patriots-Steelers game, the Broncos will no longer be tied for the most Super Bowl appearances.
Ah,
that's going by the wayside because one of them's getting to 9.
Well, and
so it goes.
Let's just cancel that game, and we'll let the Packers and Falcons be the Super Bowl.
Cool. Thanks, Andy. We'll talk to you next week on the Horse and Round podcast.
Thank you.